to Yip Podcast. This is Mary.
And this is Tammy.
Yip. And today on the show, we are super duper excited because we have an interview with Ansa from the Mesmer Society. Yip. I interviewed Ansa at the Wintersong Carnival, which was in St. Pete Beach, Florida. So I have to give a quick shout out to a Yip Podcast fan that I ran into while I was there. So Lynette, this is for you. Do 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 yep. Do 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 yep 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 Lynette. Okay. And
I don't know what just happened.
Tell all your friends. All right. So Tammy.
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, so on Tribe, you know, people think Tribe is dead.
Tribe is not dead.
But seriously, the people on bellydancingthesheer.net Tribe do not believe that.
No kidding. I was on Tribe for like 4 days. I logged back in today. 500 posts. What?
400 of them happened in like a 2 day period.
Wow.
Because I was only off for like 2 days. It was 411. And I'm like, oh.
Were they all on that one thread about watching other dancers?
No, there's only 33 people on that thread. There's 93. And what are our attitudes toward belly dance style? I don't.
Was that the cross post one?
No, that was built off of the cross post one, which had 122 replies.
I didn't even read the one that was built off the cross post one. Because I've been kind of busy lately and I got bored. What was the one that was built off? What was that about?
Okay. It was what our attitudes toward belly dance styles says about us. So, for instance, one of the girls had made a comment on the other thread that said, when I first started, I thought cabaret was an insult to women. It was blurty, sassy, and altogether too well. Look at me, look at me. And Shira had posted that she thought a lot of people judge dance styles on issues that are internal issues that they may have, like, with themselves.
Oh.
And so what are some attitudes and what do they say about us? I think Shira should have been clear when she started that thread. I think what she was saying is, basically, what did you originally think or what do you think of other dance styles? And then what do you think that says about you as an individual? And, you know, a lot of people thought, everyone thinks something when they first see different styles of belly dance that might not always be positive. But the longer you've been dancing, the more you've seen, your attitudes definitely change.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. And so I think when she started that thread, I think some people got offended.
People will spend too much time getting offended. Can I just tell you that, Tammy?
I'm offended by everybody.
I as well, but...
There's a cute thread on here on belly dance costumes on pets, which just made me think of our fact-free question number four, which if you're not on our tribe, on your podcast tribe, you should go because fact-free question number four is, besides snakes, what other animals do you think we should dance with?
The possibilities are endless.
They really are. And then you could dress them up in little belly dance costumes, and then you can post that on the sheer.net tribe.
So adorable. I know, right?
Oh, the other tribe I've been looking at, obviously, because I always look there, is a geisha moth tribe. And she just came out with this, with these little things called mini vanities. She made like six of them and they've already sold. She had like a flash for six of them and they're gone. But they're so cute. They're basically like tiny little mirrors and they all have like, you know, cool like metal borders. And then she's put flowers or maybe like a little key or something on the framework of the little mirror, and then you could clip it in your hair or you can clip it on your clothes or you can clip it anywhere, and it's just this little teeny tiny mirror and it's called mini vanity. And I just was like, she just comes up with the cutest little things. But so anyway, the sheer.net tribe is like way busy and the geisha moth tribe has cute stuff, so visit those tribes often.
Check it out.
So what's going on with you, Mary?
I did just go to Wintersong Carnival, so I thought I'd just talk a little bit about what happened there.
Ooh, yes, please, since I didn't get to go.
First of all, it's pretty cool. They had a lot of cool people there. Ansa and August from the Mesmer Society were there. And Olivia Kissel was there from Zafira. And I was so depressed because I'd emailed her and asked her if I could interview her. And she'd said, sure. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, you came up with questions and everything. Yeah. I'm so proud.
And she said they were good questions. I was like, oh, blush. And then it like just didn't happen. The first day I was there, she was busy and running around and I didn't want to be like, hey, let me interview you. And then the next day she didn't get to the venue until right before her workshop. And then I had to come back to town. Like I sped like a crazy woman because I'm taking my improv comedy class. And I saw three people pulled over on my way back. I'm horrible at speeding. Really, really bad. Really good, depending on how you look at it. And
she speeds a lot.
This one guy got pulled over right in front of me. Like the lights flashed on, like three car lengths ahead of my car. And I had heart palpitations and I was like, oh good, it's the guy in that other car. You know, traffic gods.
Was that when I was talking to you on the phone?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she thanked the guy for speeding just a little faster than she was. So that way he got pulled over and not her. Yay team is what I think she said.
Anyway, so I felt really bad, but Olivia said we might be able to persuade her to Skype in. I took one of Olivia's workshops and we learned this little choreography that had these cool, like long drawn out things. And she does a lot of stuff with arms, which is good because I don't know, sometimes when you're choreographing, sometimes I forget that they can do other things. Like, you know, when I'm choreographing, then I can make them move independently and maybe they can be doing different woo, you know, whatever. So
I wish you guys could have seen that woo. It was like some crazy monkey snake arm thing. I don't know. It was a little wild, but it's fun. Like,
got some good ideas from that. And I really enjoyed it because she was doing a piece that was in six. So it was sort of waltzy, you know. So it's different. You know, most workshops are like in common time. So we weren't counting beats of four. It was like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. And then I did the August workshop with like singing Romani songs and gypsy songs. I'd taken it at TriboCon last year, but I really enjoyed it. I like singing. What else did I do? Oh, and I took an ANSA workshop with Fan. And in all honesty, I didn't really think I was going to be super excited about it. I was like, oh, you know, I'll take a Fan workshop. I'll try anything once. And I was like, meh, meh, meh. But I really liked it.
Yeah, I was so excited to hear you liked it because I know you're, you know, out of all the props that can be chosen, Fanness is not necessarily like your go-to your go-to piece. Like that's not really you,
yeah,
necessarily. But
exactly.
When I heard you took it and you liked it, I was like, oh my god, that must have been an amazing workshop.
It was totally amazing, and I'm not going to say a lot about it because you'll just have to take her workshop next time she's in town. It's worth it. But overall, I liked it. It was a small sort of venue, so it was a little more intimate, and the classes weren't huge-ungus. And the weather was beautiful. I walked on the beach. Walked on the beach.
That is a good thing, for me at least, that I like about being here in Florida and being able to take workshops on the coast, even though I know you're not, like, the hugest fan of Spirit. But I know a lot of people who travel from up north or the Midwest and go to Spirit of the Tribe specifically so they can go there and then go to the beach.
I know.
I mean, because it's like such a great vacation. You know, I've been to out of town workshops where it's like there's not a lot to do. So it's like outside of doing the workshop, you're just kind of like, do, do, do. You know, it's not like a lot of stuff to do. But I think in Florida, we do have that benefit of having a beach nearby.
So that's about it for that. I ended up interviewing ANSA in like this back room that was filled with like it's the back room of this Russian restaurant. And it's filled with all kinds of just junk. It's got like old furniture, random broken boards, pieces of old used like packing tape, and it's like a junk room. It's like a garage, you know, just like all kinds of random stuff. So I'm sitting back there hunched over this microphone facing ANSA, trying to like not be creepy. I wanted to be close enough, and the workshop kicked off in the next room. The music was getting kind of loud, so I was kind of like inching the microphone closer, but I didn't want to be like totally in her space. So it was weird. It was really dark. I couldn't find a light switch. So, you know, dusk was falling. It was like creepy. If it had smelled better and been cleaner, it would have been kind of romantic. Alas, the moment was lost.
Yeah. Because old furniture and stuff is really romantical.
There is like this chair where I think it was like a pedicure chair. Like this old, not hooked up pedicure chair. Like this comfortable chair and then like this big basin where your feet would go. And I'm thinking, what are you doing here, pedicure chair? But it didn't answer.
Oh, pedicure chair.
That's hard to say. Pedicure, 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 pedicure. Well, it didn't seem hard that time, but a minute ago
I had a pedicure hard. Like once or twice. I don't like people touching my feet.
I've never had a pedicure. I don't trust people with sharp implements.
I do want to take Josie to have a pedicure though, because she loves when like I paint her toenails and pamper her like that. She's
gonna be vain about her feet. She's gonna be feet vain. Oh.
Okay. So Mary.
Yeah, Tammy.
Do you have like music for us today?
I do have like music for us today.
Nice.
Nice indeed. So in keeping with the whole Ansa Mesmer Society balcony circusy theme. We're going to have some balcony circusy selections today. Nice. I know you're as excited as I am. Okay. So our first featured artist is going to be Fanfare Ciocarlia, which I may or may not be pronouncing correctly. And the name of the album is Gili Garabdi. And he's apparently this really famous musician. Nice. I just sounded really dismissive, but I didn't mean it that way. And Fanfare Ciocarlia is like this fusion of like gypsy, Balkan, jazz, Latin, kind of all squashed together. It's fun. It's a little frenetic. So we are going to listen to Rumba de la Lassi, Golden Days, which is a little bit slower, calms down, and then Hora Evriaska. Because there was another Hora.
That's true.
I mean, like on the CD, there's two Hora somethings.
There's, you know, a Hora. Here's a Hora. Wouldn't you like to be a Hora too? Okay.
Wrong.
Just play the music. Just play the music.
So that's Fanfare Ciocarlia.
Very circusy, I agree.
We're like, I know, right? I was like ready to hop in my seat.
Yeah, I really like that Rumba de la Lassi. That was fun.
And I liked the Golden Days one. I mean, I like them all, obviously, but I like Golden Days. It was a little bit slower. Not so you'd notice, really, but I like it. It's fun.
But. So we've got Ansa's interview now.
So excited. This is Mary with the Yip Podcast, and I'm here with Ansa O'Leary of the Mesmer Society and Other Awesomeness. How are you doing, Ansa?
I'm doing awesome. I am having a great time.
So I'm interviewing you as the Winter Sun Carnival in St. Pete Beach, Florida is sort of finishing up. And you just came from your very cool narrative belly dance class, which I took at TribalCon earlier this year. How'd the class go? How are you feeling?
Oh, it was great. I would say every community is different in how comfortable they are with taking creative risks, which that particular class definitely requires. It's almost more an acting class than a dance class, although it strives to combine the two. And this community was up for the challenge.
I heard how they were up for the challenge. Lots of loud noises, which is always nice. You know, that's participating. Absolutely. Right there. So to kick things off, do you have a website or websites? This is kind of a rhetorical question. I know you have many websites.
I do
so
have many.
If you could give me a couple of your favorite websites that people could visit if they want to learn more about you.
Okay. My personal resume site is hardestworkingwomaninshowbusiness.com. And that sounds kind of crazy, but it's because I do event production in addition to teaching, performing, being an artist and author. So that kind of put everything in one place. From there, you can also look at mesmersociety.com, which will give you a little bit more information about my touring project with August Hare. And then triberiginal.org and sideshowburlesque.org are both the home sites for festivals that I produce. Triberiginal being a 4-day family-friendly, Whole Foods-oriented, total immersion tribal dance music and culture camp, and sideshowburlesque.org takes you to the Americana Burlesque and Sideshow Festival, which is a 3-day sideshow and burlesque festival that I organize. So that's
a great title.
Yeah, that's a lot, but there you have it.
Okay, so that will get people started should you want to know more about our lovely guest today. You can't see her because this is audio, but trust me. All right, so get a general feel. How long have you been belly dancing, and have you taken any other dance forms before or after or during?
Okay. I've been saying 10 years for a while.
So it might be 11 by now.
So I assume that's probably still true. So at least 10 years of belly dance. And I started in my own small community. I live in Asheville, North Carolina. So I started there just in a swell gals class. I just wandered in one day and eventually got the crazy eye of the person who's become a rabid belly dance fanatic. But prior to that, I had no dance training to speak of. So I definitely came to it late and uncoordinated. I did do many years of capoeira, which is Brazilian foot fighting.
So that's tough.
It was great. Yeah, that was my segue into the movement arts and really cultural arts. And it prepared me really well, actually, for what I'm doing now in the Mesmer Society, because in capoeira, in addition to the movement, which is intense, it's foot fighting. In addition to the movement, you are expected to learn to sing all the songs in Portuguese and make and play your own instruments.
So do you have a berimbau at home?
I do. In fact, it was my oldest son's first word. And
wow.
So coming into now that I do Eastern European music with the da-da-da-da-da, with, you know, memorizing all these syllables, I was like, you know what? I could do this. I've already done this in another language.
Very cool. I love Portuguese.
Mm. It's my name, actually. Onça is Portuguese.
Very cool. Does it mean something? I keep saying very cool. Oh my God, I have no other expressions. I'm going to go back to awesome.
Belly dancing is so cool. Belly dancing rules. Onça is sort of a generic Brazilian Portuguese word for cat, actually. So yeah. Onça pintada. Onça pintada is a leopard. Onça de leche is a cocktail made out of...
made out of cat?
Made out of... Well, it literally means cat's milk, but I promise it's not for me.
That's good to know.
It's Brazilian,
for you world travelers.
Brazilian cane liquor and chocolate. You know, things I like. Moving on.
Now, Bracamundi has been together for about 10 years. How does it run? Is it it's still going strong, I assume.
It is.
And who runs it when in your absence?
Well, that is the great thing about the group. I came into belly dancing in sort of an unusual way because I live in a small community where there were no venues. You know, we had a teacher, you know, who's a great gal, but you know, it was like a sort of an insular experience. Mm-hmm. And so the folks in class, and there were no real performance opportunities, so the gals in class, you know, who wanted to take it up a notch, made like a little informal troupe. We made a group, you know, so that we could woo, so that we could project our voices. We made a group so that we would have a chance to further our education, essentially. It was a collaborative effort, and I learned a lot about the power of collectivity, and I also learned that for me, in order to have a really satisfactory creative experience, I needed something that was more focused and more polished. So I started Bracamundi kind of straight out of the canon. I mean, it wasn't at that point, you know, I always knew that if I was going to do this at all, I wanted to do my very best, and that when I grew up, I wanted to be able to stand near Jill Parker and not feel like a big dork. I'm still working on that part. But, you know, I knew that I had ambitions to really commit to this totally. So Bracamundi really started with that in mind. I just wanted a directed but group-oriented learning experience with live music. And so, I mean, that really starts almost at the beginning of my dance life. So I don't know, so maybe that's 12 years now that I've been dancing. So it's always been essentially a directed collective. And I could write a book about how you might or might not choose to run a group at this point based on years of experience. I'm glad to offer my advice for what it's worth. To people, save you years of toil. learning these things. One of the things about the group that was interesting for me at the very beginning is that we were rich. We've always been rich with musicians where I live, strangely, considering it's a very small town in the mountains of North Carolina. But so I've always worked with live music. Brockamundi's always been a live music and dance ensemble, and I segued from being very involved in the day-to-day life of that group and directing that, including the band, to working with August and having more of a little bit more of a hands-off approach with Brockamundi, because I'm like, okay, these are our goals, here's some ideas, and when I'm in town, I go to the gals' rehearsals, and I give them critique, suggestions, set up gigs, you know, basically offer them the benefit of my experience, but, I can really trust them to want to do and be their very best. So they are essentially self-policing, if that's the right word. I mean, they're just very driven, and these days, rather than pulling out of my ongoing classes, Brockamundi is comprised entirely of people who already have full dance lives of their own. So that creates a slightly different tone in the group from in the past when, you know, folks who were coming up through classes went through Brockamundi a lot of times and then decided that what they really wanted to do was start their own solo career and that kind of thing. So it's just a very different dynamic, and it's one that works really well for me because it's all grown artists, you know, fully functional, independent artists who know what it is to be an adult, know what it is to be in the arts, and know what it is to have me be out of town a lot of the time.
I read in another interview I found online, you refer to yourself as a bandit queen. And you said in the interview I read that you were very careful about who else you invited to become a bandit queen. So my question for you, Ansa, is if bandit queens fight over choreography or anything else, how do you duel?
That is an excellent question. If I told you, no, of course I'd have to kill you.
If it's capoeira, I'm pretty much screwed.
Although I will say the capoeira came in very handy a couple weeks ago at a gig. I had to set a gentleman straight with my foot to his face, and I kid you not. But anyway, that's the perilous life of the roaming performer.
Well, keep your secrets. All will out in the end, I'm sure.
When the memoirs are written.
The tell-all autobiography. Coming soon.
Yeah, right after our CD. Which means it'll take a while.
Speaking of your CD, so let's talk about Mesmer Society really quick.
Yes, ma'am.
So you are part of Mesmer Society along with August Hare.
That's correct.
How did you guys meet?
His story, short and sweet, is that he has been playing accordion for 15 years since he was a teenager in Alabama. He decided there were too many guitarists, so he wanted to do something else. So he locked himself in the basement and played the accordion, never imagining someday it would actually be cool. So he started playing for a group in Birmingham, Alabama, and then when he moved to Asheville, I mean, I was the director of the only group that did belly dance and live music, so we crossed paths that way, and he actually played for Brockamundi for a while. Mm-hmm. But he left the belly dance community for a while, and it was a mix of belly dance drama can be a little intense, you know, and he's like, I just want to play music and I want to play to the best of my ability, and all this other stuff really isn't what it's about for me. Mm-hmm. And he was developing this incredible love of Balkan music, which is really rigorous and it's a very different discipline. So he, you know, we knew each other, you know, but he went off to do his thing and I kept working on my essentially an Arabic fusion, you know, tribal group. So our musicality went sort of in a different direction. 2 years ago, when I knew personally that I was ready to sort of put a bow around my Brockamundi experience as it had been and mm-hmm. focus on a smaller, you know, at times we've had up to 10 people in the group, you know,
musicians
and dancers. I mean, it's just a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. it's less money for everybody if you want to have a bunch of, you know, people who are committed professionals and talk about traveling and the logistics of moving all those people and schedules. So I knew that I wanted something that was more compact and more appropriate to my personal interests, which are versatile because I'm, you know, in addition to being a dancer and a teacher, I mean, I'm also really a singer and an entertainer, and that's not something that fits easily into the belly dance model as it was. So I had this vision of creating a slightly different project, and I was a little afraid to ask him, honestly, because he is such a genius. He's so fabulous that I was like, do you have, by any chance, want to come back to the belly dance world? It's different. It's a brave new belly dance world. And so he's like, he did it. We did a gig or two, and our first gig actually ended up being opening for the Yard Dogs, which wasn't at all what we expected. And then we were scheduled to teach at TribalCon, and at TribalCon that year, whatever it was, a couple years ago, I taught my cane class and went to the emergency room with pneumonia.
That's right, because that was the year you didn't perform.
That's correct.
And everybody was like, oh, our cane class was so fun.
It was so bad, I went to the emergency room. I was there for 5 hours. I had like a full-blown out-of-body experience.
Oh my gosh.
Tourniquets, the whole nine yards, you know, everything. The Atlanta emergency room in the middle of the night.
Where'd they put the tourniquet?
here, and then they left it, like, wrapped around my arm.
This is what we know about medicine. Here, wear this on your arm. Yeah. You'll be fine, honey.
Yeah, it wasn't all that helpful, but I was afraid I was going to die in the hotel. So I went to the emergency room, and so we were dialing it in from the Hafla. So we were, like, in a conference call from the Hafla at TribalCon to the emergency room. So he performed, I'm like, welcome to the belly dance world. You'll have to handle it on your own, because I'm... So I just kind of threw him to the wolves. So he was fabulous. He did a great job, and I was mistaken for one of the quiet, serious gothic types. I was literally shrouded in black and quiet because I had pneumonia. So that was also early in our collaborative career, and so it's been all uphill since then.
That's good.
No, but that was how we came. You know, so we knew each other for a very long time. We've just come back together, and we had intended to come together, you know, for a short time to, you know, just do some quick collaborations, and it's turned into a lifestyle.
That's really nice. So we mentioned, well, we made reference to this briefly earlier, but we've heard mention of a CD that he's working on, or you guys are working on together.
That's correct. That's correct.
So is this going to come out before your children's children?
It surely will. It surely will. You know, again, August is a very capable musician, you know, but it's a different thing to produce an album, you know, and because he has, not only because he has high artistic standards, but, you know, because the music that we're working with, some of it is traditional music, you know, which is public domain, you know, but some of it is music that has been composed by Eastern European people within living memory, you know, so you can't just go grab that music and record it all over again and make money on someone else's culture. I mean, he's very sensitive to making sure that the pieces that he records are either original, you know, are public domain arrangements, you know, and that they are, you know, up to his high artistic standards.
Speaking of higher artistic standards, I heard him singing Lucky Star by Madonna on your MySpace.
Well, yes.
So would you like to comment?
Okay, I have two things to say about that. One is that it's a little known fact of the Menswear Society that August has several goals in terms of the music that he picks. That's, you know, that's part of his, in the great, you know, musical domestic division of labor. You know, he is the great expert on finding the music for us to work with, or writing it, because he writes, you know, original material for us as well. But so his focus is dual, and one is to see it literally if he can take all of the sounds, the melody lines and the chords and everything from an entire brass band and fit it into one instrument, which he does by having a very developed sense of the left hand and all the bass notes. So he'll, like, fit an entire melodic part in one hand and an entire part in the other. So he has this personal focus, which is part of why he's such a badass. And then also part of what he does is that he, in addition to doing the traditional songs, he takes Romanian dance hall, for example, like the contemporary music of Eastern Europe, and refocifies it. So someone from there would be like, I know this song. They played this at
like Romanian techno or something?
Yes. For example, last night we were at a party and we were doing Romanian dance hall, which is, you know, it's Romanian hip hop. Vrekati-day, vrekati-day. You know, so yes, we're doing, so he's rapping in Romanian and so forth. So, you know, I mean, it's like, it's there for us all to enjoy, but he's not going to turn right around and take another existing artist's music and make money off it. You know, I mean, there's a code of respect among musicians. So, and to bring it back to the Madonna thing, I mean, the pleasures of balkanizing pop music, it's a dirty pleasure, but it's one that we share.
I've taken 3 workshops from you.
Okay.
I took your Cane workshop,
yes.
Ill-fated weekend in Georgia. I also took your Narrative Ballet Dance TribalCon, and this weekend I took your Fan workshop.
Yeah.
So, like, 2 out of 3 were prop workshops, and you seem to really have an affinity and a love for props. So, out of all the lovely props that are out there, what is your favorite and why?
Oh, well, you know, each tool to its proper use.
You have to pick one. They're not going to get their feelings hurt. Just one favorite.
If by favorite you mean most indispensable?
Most versatile.
Let's take that tack. I would say for me it is the fan, and for the reasons that I delineate in my class. Fans have a rich history that's not integral to the belly dance, the history of belly dance in our culture, but fans themselves have so many layers of meaning and being both feminine and also very proactive. They can be used for the language of love and also as a weapon. I mean, I love the versatility of them. And, I am a hot dancer, and I don't mean in the sense of swanky. I mean, I get hot on stage, and I'm often in the public eye for a great deal of time. In the Menswear Society, I wear a great deal of clothes. I wear a lot of skirts. I may be ventilated, but I wear a lot of skirts. I just get hot, you know, with all that stuff on. And so the fan also gives me little gypsy air conditioning. I love swords. I love working with cane. Really, you know, it's honestly, it's all the sort of pokey, wacky ones that suit my nature best.
So you have a whole workshop called Narrative Belly Dance, where you help people sort of become more emotionally demonstrative during their dance. Well, that sounds bad when I say it that way.
No, no, but
emote better when they're mm-hmm. dancing. Emote more better, if you please.
Wicked way more better.
No word answer. So taking that into account, when you decide to do a performance piece, do you mainly work off of choreography, or you know whether you do improvisational predominantly or choreography predominantly? Yeah. Do you use a character more, or do you follow the sort of the mood of the music more? I guess you can do both.
Yeah, but both of those things are true. If persona is the word, you know, or a stage, particular stage presence in the context of the Mesmer Society. But it is versatile, you know, because I think of this persona, or for lack of another word, that this character-driven aspect of myself that I present, you know, as sort of the overblown flower, you know, the rose past its prime, you know, so hopefully there's still something that is, you know, something light and beautiful and poignant that can be presented within that, you know, but it also allows for this great spectrum that can go from, you know, comedy, tragedy, and technical proficiency. We strive to fit ideally all of that into one set, if possible, and also to sing and dance. So, and actually, it's a challenge when we go to like large events where, you know, like, okay, you've got 5 minutes, and, you know, we can, of course, adapt to any circumstance, but what we do is bigger than 5 minutes. And I don't mean that in any sort of aggrandizing way, but in 5 minutes, August would need to sing and play. I would need to sing while he plays. We would need to be able to sing together, you know, and do a duet. And I would need to be able to dance in an established character building way. So that is a lot. That would give a minute to each of those activities in a 5 minute slot. Could be done, but it'd sound a little bit like. So ideally, you know, 15 minutes, I feel like, is enough time for us to cover all that ground. And, you know, I mean, I want the audience to really be able to be fully attentive to the fact that he's a badass, you know, or fully attentive to the character building that I attempt to do on stage rather than just sitting and waiting for my chance to dance around. There's a narrative arc that I like to see in our set when it's possible. Yes. Does that help?
That totally helps. Because you're awesome.
Oh, pshaw. Here's your other $5. Keep saying it.
Thanks. So you've taught weekly classes, yes?
Yes.
And obviously now you're sort of on the workshop circuit. Which type of teaching do you think you prefer?
Okay, they do have different virtues, because in a weekly class, of course, you have the opportunity, you know, generally the ratio of, you know, teacher to student is different, and you have the opportunity to identify someone's need in the moment and then help to coach them, you know, week to week, class to class as needed. And to a certain extent that comes up in the workshop circuit, because you know, if people are really devoted, you will see the same people every couple months, you know, in different cities, or every year at the same event, and you can see their trajectory, you know, and see what the choices that they made and how they may have built on your suggestions or otherwise. Because I'm traveling so much now, I've actually had to relinquish my weekly teaching practice just in the last few months. And I will do that again. Well, the Brockamundi gals are doing it for me, you know, so I can still nurture that sense of, you know, native community in our own area. But there are, you know, there's something to be said for the pleasures of the traveling circuit, partly because we get to work more intensively on topic-driven material.
Yes.
In a weekly class, more of the, like, we warm up, there's some stuff that happens, we drill, we maybe address some staging or some combinations or some traveling, or, you know, maybe, you know, 8 weeks of baskets or something. And cooling down, but it's all compressed into a very small amount of time, you know, so each one of those things, it gets, you know, 10 or 20 or 40 minutes of time. And in this situation, of course, you know, I can be like, y'all just warmed up in the last person's class, so we're just going to work as hard as we possibly can for 2 hours till we're all laughing and sweaty. You know, that's something that you don't have the luxury of doing quite as often in one's own town. Is that?
Yes.
Does that elucidate it clearly?
Elucidate. 50-cent word. That's a good one. I also read that you were the first person to ever be certified or to take the general skills from Carolina Noriccio. That's crazy. How'd that happen?
It would only slightly be overstating it to say that Carolina invented the general skills because I asked her to.
It's
only slightly overstating it. I mean, we knew each other, you know, from me hosting. You know, mm-hmm. At one privileged point in my life, all of Fat Chance came to Asheville, North Carolina. There were 6 of them. It was epic. It was amazing. And I reached a point in my personal trajectory as an artist, and this was partly because I was so active in my local community. I needed a certification. of some kind in terms of somebody who is working in the schools, working in community centers, working in colleges, right. and so forth. I mean, folks in systems want credentials. And I knew that I wanted credentials, you know, for all of the, essentially for business reasons. You know, again, the personal validation was nice. But I needed this, and there was no existing certification system that met quite my needs in terms of time, availability, money, aesthetics. There was nothing that quite met my needs. And I actually called Caroline and was like, Miss, ma'am, goddess, person of belly dance, this is the situation I'm in, and is there something we can do? And I flew out to San Francisco and worked with her in the studio, and I couldn't be certified in, you know, ATS, because that's not what we were doing. But, you know, she was able to create, we sort of co-created a little curriculum for ourselves while I was there, which she has certainly expanded upon now and you know, made much more of a, you know, I would be honestly, I would say it probably means more now because she's had so much time to flesh out how her vast knowledge of belly dance can be of use to people outside of cued improv. And that was what I really wanted from her as somebody who was working, you know, performing with a dude in a chair. I mean, cued improv doesn't really come into it quite the same. It was just one of those things that I had a need and she had the availability and we came together. And then I'm delighted to say that she went on to create a whole curriculum to address the needs of people all over the world.
It all because of you. Well, I took general skills last year, you know, so thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. How'd it go for you?
It went really well.
For me, it was terrifying because it was just me and her alone in the studio. And I guess we'll start by you dancing around for me. And I was like,
I'll just stare at you. Don't be nervous.
Sheer terror. I was like, this is the sheer terror that I wasn't really expecting. How could I not have seen this coming? It's what I would have done if I was her.
So you are from Asheville. You've been to California. I know you've been in a lot of places in the Southeast to teach. Mm-hmm. What's like the wackiest place you've ever been to teach? Like, somebody ran through the room screaming, and he had a broadsword. It was weird.
Well, honestly, there are so many ways that I can answer that question. it's almost like the question is really, like, what's the weirdest thing that ever happened to you?
Basically, yeah.
We went out to Southern California to Politi's. Politi from Strawberry Butterfly. She's a regular teacher at Tribe Original. We went out to her place on Friday, August 9th, and flying with the accordion was very unnerving at that point of the game because, you know, it says fragile, like the airports care. So Friday we get there, and they're like, oh, your luggage, it's on the next plane. It's coming Saturday morning. It still hasn't come. The workshop is at noon. So we don't have an accordion. We don't have any costumes. I don't have my dance pants for class, and I've got like 5 hours of workshops to teach that day. It showed up with much cursing and vexation 5 minutes before. and oh, you know, so that's vexing. The accordion was destroyed.
Oh, my God.
Because an accordion has a lot of elaborate workings. I mean, there's 120 buttons and then all these keys, and it's, you know, a whole series of harmonicas that are held into place with, you know, a particular kind of mix of pine tar and bees. It's, you know. Anyway, they had all been shaken loose. Like, the thing was, it was straight up busted. And he was like, I can clap for an hour of class, but I can't play for, I can't sing for 5 hours straight and then do this show and do this again the next day. It was sheer terror. Fortunately, the airlines came through and did what they should have done. But in the moment, blessedly, we're stressed out. We're in the back. The workshop's about to start. Like, what are we going to do? And this fella, we never met him before in our lives, comes in. It's like, hey, I thought I'd come and stop by and meet the musician guy. We're like, oh, we're so stressed out. Anyway, the fella said, oh, I got an accordion in my car. I just bought it. And August is like, don't mess with me, man. I'm a little stressed out right now. He's like, no, really, I just bought it in the thrift store. I've never played it before. So he just brings it right in, this cute little Art Deco accordion. And August is like, this'll do. And he walked through the door with an unknown accordion and he played it all day. In the space between the workshops and the show, repaired the accordion using bobby pins. And you know, got through the night. And since then, we've learned how to troubleshoot the whole wide world of accordion travel. That was certainly the most stressful and bizarre set of... I mean, weirder things have happened.
That's crazy,
but though, that was a real, like, oh my gosh, that's like you are going to be putting a show on with the circus, but you lost all the elephants. I mean, it's like, how are we going to do anything with no, you know, anything?
Elephants.
With no elephants, you know.
But then a guy comes and has an elephant in the car. That doesn't happen.
That doesn't
often.
Not much. So, since you asked, I would say that's the craziest thing that's happened.
Are there any places or specific teachers that you would like to study with? Any places in the Middle East or in the Balkan area that you would like to live for a while and study?
Oh, certainly. I will say, first off, that honestly, I just would like to be able to train more. Because I personally, I have a family. I have small children. As you can imagine, that puts a demand on my time. And it is very challenging to meet my commitments as an artist and, of course, my more important commitments as a mother, you know. So that's always a delicate balancing act. And I think probably every mother feels like you don't always feel like you're in the winning end of that battle. So I would like to just have more time to dedicate, because we go to these events. I mean, ideally I would be taking other people's classes all day long, but when you're teaching and performing and traveling, it's fairly rigorous. And I've just discovered that between doing that and meeting my other essential commitments, I don't have any time. We were in Third Coast in Texas, and Amel Tof Soot was there. She's incredible. I suppose she's North African. She's a beautiful presence, incredible, sincere. She's like the source material of what we do. It's not through the fusion filter, you know, it's like the direct information. The long and the short of it is that I would love to be able to do more training with source, you know, informationistas, if I could. I aspire to be able to fit in more travel, the extended variety, like a week and a half at a time or so. But for me, it's always a delicate balancing act of making sure that my little ones' needs are met. We're very well supported on the home front in that. But nonetheless, I mean, this is honestly how I support my family as well. So it's not just a luxury to be in the belly dance world. Like, I've been supporting my family doing this for a long time, and so they need me to be here, and I need to be here as an artist, but I also need my children to be, have their needs fully met, and one of their needs is to see their mama. So, it's an ongoing balancing act.
I want to talk really quickly about some of the events you produce.
Okay.
Like, I was really interested in seeing the burlesque and sideshow.
Sure.
I think that's just crazy.
Speaking of elephants.
So, what interested you in burlesque? Like, how long have you been sort of into the circusy realm?
A long time. I'm pleased to say longer than it's been cool. Not to sound snarky.
It's cool now.
Yeah, it's the hip thing. All the kids are doing it. I started performing in the early 2000s with the Accidental Circus. You know, a motley crew of performers, sideshow freaks and whatnot. So, yeah, I've been working with circus stuff for quite a while, and I have had a lot of influence from that community. And as far as the burlesque community, I started my festival. I started it 5 years ago. This will be the fourth year, so I had, been in the planning stages. My intention there, as I don't actually perform burlesque in the sense of personal stripping, but what I saw in the burlesque community at that time was that notion of entertainment or transformation above all else, mm-hmm. Because burlesque isn't a series of moves. You will learn the first five bump and grind things in a workshop, but it's not about that. It is about a fully realized, the costume, the music, the staging, the gimmick, the sequence, the timing. Like, it's a really comprehensive package, and it's very demanding. Good people in that community go all out. I found that very inspiring. There was a lot of shifting in my local area as the burlesque community was going through sort of a coming of age, and I personally, as an event producer, really wanted to see it grow well, and so I wanted to create an atmosphere where people who were committed were rewarded by having the opportunity to perform in a really high quality professional setting with appropriate pricing. And it was that crossing of the roads that belly dance
right.
perhaps was once at. It's like, this can either go down this path where kind of everybody's standards are lowered and everyone suffers for a generation, as far as pricing and things go, or we can continue to push this idea that this is essentially an American folk art. It is a unique art form for adults, but it has so much more. There's satire and cleverness, and it's versatile. So at any rate, I personally was very invested in the idea that the circus and burlesque arts should continue to be presented on a silver platter rather than in the back alley. So my festival exists specifically to create quality education and information for aspiring artists and also for the public. It just means a lot to me, which is interesting, because what I do in the Mesmer Society, it's not burlesque in the sense, neither August nor I strip, but we are often rolled into the burlesque community in the public perception, because what we do is also outside the straight up belly dance genre, so we have it's neat to be able to have some lateral movement in our project.
So who are your featured performers at the Burlesque Festival this year?
This year, the headliner this year is Michelle L'Amour, who's a very well-known performer out of Chicago, very versatile. She's won competitions and whatnot. She was on America's Got Talent, among other things. And then Paulo Garbanzo, who I worked with in the Accidental Circus, he was one of the Karamazov brothers, and he is also the official jester of England.
I didn't know they had an official jester.
Yes, he won in a competition. He's the first American to ever win in a competition. So he is emceeing and performing his Mousetrap show and other things at the Burlesque Festival. But August and I will be entertaining on the bus, which is the Lazoom bus is a 40-foot purple vaudeville bus. It has a vaudeville stage in it. So we put all the burlesque and sideshow performers in it with a case of wine and an accordion band, and we drive them around the city, and then we have a big red carpet walk. So they all get to get off and walk this big red carpet into the opening ceremonies. And of course, half of them are in their cups at that point, and half of them are coming out of their cups because, of course, they're pinup girls and they're all dolled up. So it's highly entertaining.
It sounds like quite a spectacle.
It's very special. Yeah, it makes for some epic photo opportunities. But I digress. This is my other week and my other life. In this part of the world, I'm a very fine enough standing belly dancer.
Exactly. No argument here. So, in your fine upstanding life, you also hosted another festival called Tribe Original.
Yeah, that is my real focus as an event producer. I have to say, the Burlesque Festival is very enjoyable for me, and it's a real shot of adrenaline in the summer. But my year organizationally pretty much revolves around putting on Tribe Original. As a parent and an artist, I found that many of the people that I knew in the belly dance community who were sort of coming into their own, people who wanted to be professional or just more, again, more committed, find themselves. I was hearing belly dancers say, I guess I can't have kids because I really want to do this seriously. And I was like, that's terrible, because belly dancing, I mean, on some level, there's this vive fertility quality to belly dancing. I mean, it is pro juicy femininity. And I was, you know, sad to hear that people felt like they were having to make a choice. And as I myself had made a choice to start a family and have this crazy job, I felt like there had to be another road. So Tribe Original is an event that, you know, we have families there. It's not strictly a family event. I mean, there are plenty of people who don't have kids, but I knew that I wanted to be in an environment where teachers are treated well, where there's incredible food that you don't have to think about. So it's Whole Foods catered, and everybody eats together in the dining hall, like big family style. There's a children's program so that those of us don't have to choose between being a good parent or a good artist, because you're in this beautiful place in the mountains. There's a lake. It's cabins and all that kind of hoopla. But you can just send your little ones off to have supervised adventures while you go and take classes, you know, with Rose Harton or Sam Riggs or, you know, whoever is teaching. So there's a children's program. We also have a work-study program, which to my knowledge is the only one of its kind. So, you know, that way we have extra sets of hands, and in theory anyone can afford, you know, to be involved. There's actually 6 different class tracks, and once you get in, you can take anything you want. There's no, like, registering for the class that you want. You have to be sensitive if you walk in a class and it's already packed. Well, you might go try one of the other 6 classes that's going on. Try to book things appropriately. But there is usually 2 class tracks of dance. There's a class track of music, so we have multiple percussion and melody teachers because it's always an uphill effort to try to cultivate live music. It's a personal priority of mine. And of course, since August and I have teamed up to work, he's been a great help in that department. There are also circus arts, because we do aerials, hoops, fire safety and performance, poi, all that kind of good stuff. Yoga. There's a whole class track dedicated to construction of costuming, dealing with makeup, professional makeup, and hair. I don't know, just a real variety. There's a whole bunch of activities that are geared to the non-belly dancer in your life, too. How to make mead, how to work with leather, go on an herb walk, do some Tai Chi, you know. It's just intended to be the environment where you, as the belly dancer or musician, can go follow your passion and know that your loved ones aren't bored as they wait for you to get through with your darn belly dance habit. You know, it's a fully, it strives to be a full function belly dance and arts vacation for everybody. We were nominated for, you know, for best event. And I wouldn't expect that we will win it just because of the numbers game, you know, because it's a fairly intimate community. I mean, there's about 200 people. Oh, we have a whole chill out lounge, hookah world, you know, thing that goes on. We had maple bacon ice cream in the middle of the night at a pizza party for everybody. And we play live music all night long every night. So, you know, probably 75% of the people actually sleep, and some of us just give that a pass.
Well, you probably don't get to sleep a whole lot because you're in charge of everything.
That's a fact. And there is, you know, there's a certain maternal angst that goes with turning, you know, 200 extremely festive people loose in the woods with, like, fire and a lake. And I'm like, because this is a true community, I know everyone will police themselves. And sure enough, we had a teenager this last year who, for a minute, everyone was like, where'd she go? And it instantly was like, snap to, the whole community was like, okay. And they like did this whole search and, you know, the poor little thing, you know, she was just off, you know, probably canoodling with her friends or something, but it's like, we will let no teen go unchecked. So everyone, you know, was like, revelry stops, teen found, recommends.
Well, do you have any final thoughts, words of wisdom, shout outs?
Certainly. Oh, I'm sure I must. Here's the thing. In every community, in every part of the country, there are unsung heroes and geniuses in the belly dance community. And just because they're not in the pages of people's blogs or magazines doesn't mean that they don't have a tremendous amount to offer. So I suggest that you look around in your community and notice who is worthy of that. Zia Ali in Atlanta, you know, from Tribal Con, she's an unbelievably smart, not just about belly dance, she's a belly dance hacker. She can watch you perform your piece twice, and she knows it. She can tell you the history, and she can tell you every aspect of the belly dance business. And I mean, she's so incredibly versatile. And I'm certain that every region of the country has people like her who really, really could stand to be elevated by their peers. So appreciate what you got. Play well in the pool. And buy August CD when it comes out.
All right. So let's end with shameless self-promotion. Excellent. Can you give us a yip for our podcast? Awesome. Thank you so much, Ansa. I had the best time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, so as you know, Tammy, I'm not like the craziest burlesque enthusiast, but I gotta say, when Ansa was talking about the burlesque festival and riding around on a bus, I totally wanted to be there.
I did too. And then I hadn't realized that Michelle L'Amour is going to be the headliner. I really like her.
Sorry. Of course, I didn't know who she was. I mean, Tammy, you've taken burlesque classes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, not like intensive burlesque classes, but I mean, you are definitely a fan of burlesque. So, you know more people in the genre than I do. But I researched her because she was the headliner for AbsFest this year. And of course, I was interviewing Ansa, so I was like, you want to sound prepared. You don't want to sound like an idiot. So, disaster averted, you know.
Yeah, because you totally didn't sound like an idiot. You were very bright.
Of course, now everyone knows. Like a new penny. That's my 1 cent.
And what did you think of Michelle L'Amour?
I really liked her.
She's really, like, so performance oriented.
Yeah.
Really good.
And she's really smooth. Like, I went and watched a couple, like, on the AbsFest website. No, not the AbsFest. AbsFest website was like, hey, you know, Michelle L'Amour, who's, you know, ranked third and whatever. So I went to this other website and they had a couple of videos of her and really, really great. And there's one she did with these huge honking big feather fans. They were like ginormous fans.
Sometimes I wonder how they even carry them. They're just so big.
Granted, they're made of feathers, so they're but probably still. It's not like carrying lead, but I mean, those are big fans. And she was just like sweeping them around and it was beautiful. It was like just wow.
Look at that.
So I was impressed, yeah.
But yeah, I really liked the interview you did with Ansa. I think you did an excellent job.
Thanks. She was fun to interview.
I know, I'm so jealous.
Well, that was like me when you interviewed Amy.
Which you'll meet at Q's Tattoos.
I know.
Well, I mean, you've met her before, but you know what I'm saying.
I know. But I wasn't me then.
I'm a new shiny me.
A new shiny me. Yes. So it was fun. So thank you, Ansa. And I'm also super excited because I talked to August Hare of the Mesmer Society, since he was there as well. And eventually he's going to be coming out with a CD. And he said he might be game to come on the show when his CD came out and promote it and talk about it and be all awesome.
That would be awesome.
I know, right? Super awesome.
And what do you know when it's coming out? It kind of seems
they don't
like
even
they
know when
know.
It's coming out. Okay. I mean, every time they mentioned it, they were like, whenever the album comes out. That was like the general, it's never going to get finished laughter about the album.
So Mary, keeping with the Ansa theme, do you have more music for us?
I totally do.
Awesome.
I know. I'm going to count up how many times I said totally and awesome this one episode.
You and me both.
I'm really excited. I hope I hit 20. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Totally, fantastic. Totally, totally.
Okay. The second spotlighted artist this week is Circus Contraption, which is, let's face it, a fun name for a group. And their album that we are focusing on this lovely evening is Grand American Traveling Dime Museum, which, let's face it, is a fun name for an album. I know. Get ready for some super uber circusy music. What I like about a lot of their songs especially is that in every single song, pretty much, there's at least like one or two tempo or mood changes. So within one song, you can display a lot of different character development. So if you're really good at expressive dancing, then these songs could really work well for that because they give you a lot of places to go, a lot of area to play in. So we're going to listen to Hot Coals, which is a little bit crazy. We're going to listen to Carousel, and we're also listening to Throw the Bones. I like them all. My favorite is probably Carousel because I think it sounds creepy.
I really like Throw the Bones. Just had, I don't know, this cute little beat to it that I liked. I don't know.
Something I really liked about that one is that it has these cool, like, you know, ticky things that if you knew the song really well, you could do some cool, like, ooh, sudden shimmies. Oh, look how well I know the music. Da da da.
Look how well I know the music. I even know the song. Nice.
Anyway, cool group. Go team. That's it for music for the day. Oh, I also want to mention that today our additional music is by Dems Gray off the album Your Rainbow Color Changer. So, Tammy, what's going on around town?
I don't know.
I'll make some stuff up. They'll never know the difference. No one listens to the N-bit anyway.
For real. I don't think anyone does. Well, let's see what's going on around town. March 26th through 28th in Seattle, Washington is Cues and Tattoos. That is www.troophypnotica.com. It's going to be featuring workshops with Carolina, Mega, Amy Sigil, Read My Hips, Paulette Reese Denise will be there. Also, hey, Mary and I will be there. So, yay. Oh my god, so much is going on in April. The first event, April 2nd through 9th in Kalani, Hawaii, is Delilah's Easter Retreat. It features workshops with Amy Sigil, Dahlia Moon, Eric Brown, and Delilah. So to get information on that, go to www.delilahs-belly-dance-retreat.com. April 21st through 25th in Toronto, Canada, is the International Belly Dance Conference 2010. So that is www.bellydanceconference.com. It's an annual conference held in Canada with instructors such as Jelena, Sarah Solstice, Amel Tesfut, and Delilah. April 23rd through 25th in Hillsboro, Oregon is Sakura's Belly Dance Showcase, featuring workshops with Sakura, Aviva Kadrad, Jane Archer, David Metz, and many, many more. And the website for that is www.bellydanceshowcase.com. April 28th through May 2nd is Spring Caravan, which is part of the Ricasa Workshop series, www.ricasa.com/spring. That takes place in Somerset, New Jersey, and that features Heather Stance, Suhaila, Mimi Fontana, Tempest, Sarah Solstice. So go to ricasa.com/spring for more info on that. In Golden, Colorado, April 29th through May 2nd is Elevation 2010. That features Umada, Mesmer Society, Zafira, Rachel Bryce, and Zia. So that should be a pretty cool set of workshops as well. And that is www.evergreentribalarts.com. So that's that's the next couple events coming up. Obviously, if you want to know about more events coming up, you can join our mailing list, and you can do that by going to our website, www.eatpodcast.com, and click on the link, join mailing list. Ooh. And then while you're there, you can also click to go to our tribe, which is tribes.tribe.net/eatpodcast, or our Facebook, which you could just go to Facebook, search for us, eatpodcast. if you would like me to mention any other events, send us an email at email@yippodcast.com. You can also contact us via Skype at yippodcast and call us 321-441-3933. So, very exciting episode with Ansa. Thank you again, Ansa, and thank you, Mary, for going out there and interviewing her. I'm so jealous. Okay, so for your podcast, this is Tammy.
And this is Mary.
Yep.
The third one is Hora Evriaska.
Here we go.
So here's the deal, listeners. If you're hearing the sound of my voice right now, then you are listening to the random stuff at the end of the final yip.
Yip, yip, yip. It's like Yip After Dark.
Okay, so I'm going to start a thread on the Yip tribe asking something about Zills. And if you listen to this random garbage at the end, then when you respond, we want you to start your response with the word Zills. And we want you to end your response with exactly 5 exclamation points.
The last sentence has to end with 5 exclamation points. And if someone says Zills are the best, then don't put Zills are the best. Put Zills are my friend or something.
Zills are my friend. Dude, seriously, I wonder who's going to do it. I bet Sunshine will do it.
Dude, she talked about tasers. That was awesome. I still want a taser. Anyway.
Okay.
The end. No, really, really. Now this is the end. No, really, this is, we don't have anything more after
the
this.
The end.